Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Wednesday full of juice and energy, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Nick Nurse of the Raptors stops by today. Nick Wright of FS1 stops by today. Weston McKennie, who, by the way, is one of the great American soccer players. Team USA, United States men's national team, just won a tournament, beat Mexico. He'll be on the show today. Joy, that was a fun night. I went home last night, ordered a pizza from John and Vinny's down the street.
I have to try that place.
Oh, it's fantastic. I didn't even acknowledge my family. They were like, I don't know if I feel like pizza. I'm like, I do. That's what I'm having for
dinner.
What'd
you get on the pizza?
I went margarita.
Ooh.
And I mean, it had no shot. It was playoff intensity. I didn't take a breath. It had no shot. Full court press on the pizza. It was over in like 8 minutes. So I want to talk about this. That was the best single loss by any team in the playoffs last night, the Clippers. That was a great loss. We say this all the time about football. Like, you can win a game and be concerned, right? Like, you can lose a game and go, yeah, we should have lost that game. I was talking to Michael Strahan yesterday when the Giants lost to the Patriots years ago, the final week of the season in New York. Remember, they went and played them later in the Super Bowl. OC Umanyora put his arm around Michael Strahan. He said, fella, we play them again, we're beating them. They're not better than us. Like, you lose games and get a lot of confidence. If I'm a Clipper fan this morning, I feel great. Utah had 6 days off. Clippers had none. They flew yesterday or the day before yesterday. I mean, the Jazz were at home. The Jazz were rested. The Jazz had a layered game plan. Here is the Clippers schedule minutes before last night's game in the 6 days before they faced the Jazz. Now, think about this. They played a game five in L.A., then a three-hour flight to Dallas. Then they played Dallas, and then a three-hour flight back to Los Angeles. Then they played game seven. Then they got back on a plane. Wake up that day, they play Utah. So they traveled. They were on three flights and played three games. And then they had to play in the loudest arena so far this year. It was the first time the Jazz had played full capacity. And that place was a snake pit last night. That was the toughest road game for any team. Maybe the Hawks and the Knicks, they had an argument, but there were some seats in Madison Square Garden that were not filled. That place last night was like a college arena in the Final Four. The Clippers could have easily folded last night. They had a dreadful third quarter. They could have folded last night. They were out of energy. Nope. Came roaring back. The Clippers shot a better free throw percentage last night than the Jazz. They shot a better three-point percentage last night in the Jazz. They shot a better field goal percent last night in the Jazz. And that's with Paul George stinking up the place and Kawhi being ineffective. If you're a Clipper fan, this morning I wake up and I'm like, Clippers in six. I mean, they fell behind to Dallas 0-2, and then they won four of the next five games and kind of dominated them late. You got a bunch of factors here. Mike Conley's out. I don't know how long. Not good. He changes the pace. He's out. Number two, Kawhi Leonard was ineffective, kind of a non-factor. Paul George, I know sometimes he struggles in the playoffs, but he was particularly bad, 4-for-17. You got only two Clippers were in double digits. It's the loudest home arena all year. I mean, that thing was, I mean, the Clippers have been playing, you know, marginal crowds, semi-crowds, 70% full. And by the way, then Donovan Mitchell had the greatest game of his career and the best half of basketball by any player in the NBA this year. I love Donovan Mitchell. I love Spida. Great kid. Great player. Huge fan. He's not going to have another half like that in the series. There's no way. And folks, here's the other thing. Quinn Snyder is one of the best coaches in the NBA, but because he coaches in Utah, you know, we don't talk about him. Quinn Snyder's a great coach. He had 6 days to put in a game plan. He probably spent three on the Clippers and three on the Mavericks. Ty Lue had less than a day. He's on a plane. He's back home. They play a game. He's got interviews. He's got media. He's got... You got to be... That's like giving Andy Reid a bye week. I mean, we always know the best football coaches when you have Andy Reid, Bill Belichick, Nick Saban. It's always been that way. Barry Alvarez. When you get bowl game records, Urban Meyer bowl game records, Lou Holtz bowl game records. When you give really good coaches extra time, the really good coaches take advantage of it. Quinn Snyder had like 5 days advantage, 5.5 days on Ty Lue. And so that was not a fair fight last night. That was not a fair fight. For the Clippers to lose by a shot, they took two shots at the end. One was blocked. One of those goes in, we're going to overtime. And that is as good a loss as you can have. Paul George after the game.
We just continue to give ourselves chances. I think that's the positive. That terrible third quarter to start to have. I mean, they're playing desperation ball the whole night. And, you know, we didn't match it until late. But, you know, I think the positive out of it is, you know, we gave ourselves a chance. Regardless we gave this one up with a flat third, we still gave ourselves a chance to win this.
Next game. Equally rested, the coach is equally prepared. Spider Mitchell's not doing that in the second half. Kawhi and Paul George will play better than that. Game on, series on. I like the Clippers. So I'm ashamed of myself. One of the things about this job that I think is really fun, I mean, listen, Bill Belichick struggles, we all know this, drafting players. Best football coach ever. He struggles in the draft. A lot of it's guessing. I mean, you don't get much tape on players. You don't know if he can be good in the NFL. Bill Belichick, and that's in the NFL where you get, you know, at least multiple years of tape, is not very good in the draft. Now, there are coaches that are legendarily good in the draft. Jimmy Johnson was great with personnel. There are these coaches that are just fantastic. Jason Light, the general manager of Tampa Bay, that dude just owns the draft. Belichick, best coach ever, not great. In basketball, it's even harder. You get less tape. So I'm not going to crush a general manager. I mean, Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens had 1,000 picks. They hit one home run, Jason Tatum, and two other doubles, Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. A lot of misses. Okay, it's hard. And I fell for Ben Simmons. I grew up with Magic Johnson. I fell for Ben Simmons. 6'11 point guard. Great defense. I mean, he's got a swagger. Great ball handler. He's got Magic Johnson's vision. He can finish at the rim. He can't shoot. I know he can't shoot. Magic wasn't a great shooter when he came in either. And I've always said I'd take Simmons over Embiid because Embiid, I know he's going to fall apart. He's got a torn meniscus now in this series. I'm ashamed of myself. I'm going to go with Embiid. I decided last night. Ben Simmons, 2 games in this series, 3-for-12 from the free throw line. Total non-factor, 35 minutes last night, 4 points, 3 shots. He just doesn't care. You know what it reminds me of? And this is something I can't stand. Indifference. Joy cares about this job. I have no problem when people make mistakes out of passion. Indifference, I hate it. Jay Cutler, Johnny Manziel, Drew Locke, Jeff George. Too cool, man. Too cool, man. It's his game, man. Cool. I like my quarterbacks to be dorks. Peyton Manning's obsessed. Russell Wilson's obsessed. Matt Stafford, get me out of here. I got to win games. You can have too cool guy. Ben Simmons is too cool. He won't work on his game. Embiid scares me to death with his body. He cares. He's productive. He's marketable. He rallies the troops. They had him on the mic last night. He is so into every possession. He cares. Ben Simmons, he's too cool. I saw a story. It's funny. I saw a story. NBA scouts were talking to Ryan Russillo, a buddy of mine, about Ben Simmons on a podcast. And we found this morning. Quote, said a scout to Ryan Russillo, Ben doesn't put in the time. Loves L.A., Hollywood guy. If he ever got serious about improving his shooting, free throws, he could be Giannis. He's not wired that way. Lots of cool guy with him. I swear to God, I wrote my notes before I read that. But, you know, here's the thing with Embiid. There's one thing I'm worried about, and it's a huge thing, the injury. I admit it. It's we all watch these games. When big guys get hurt early, they get hurt later. It's a huge thing to worry about. But that's all I worry about with Embiid. He cares. He's productive. He's coachable. He's marketable. He's all in. He rallies the troops. He's a leader. And he's a, you know, he's the closest thing to Shaq I've seen. But I always understood when the Lakers took Kobe over Shaq because Kobe was more, he was more obsessed with it. It's not that Shaq was indifferent. So I understood, you know, I'm always kind of reluctant on taking the big over the wing or the guard. I really am. But not when the guard's indifferent. I'm looking at Ben Simmons' numbers last night. After I watched that game, I'm like, he's invisible. He took three shots. Three shots? That's it? I mean, my bad. Like, I'll deal with a big who's going to get hurt again. But there, I cannot deal with indifference. I cannot deal with cool guy. You ever remember a cool guy in high school? Right now, if you're driving your car, you're at work. Think about cool guy. Cool guy in high school. You know what he is now? He's 44. He wants you to care about his golf game and fantasy team. He now works for somebody who was not a cool guy in high school. You can have cool guy. Give me uncool guy. Give me guy that cares. Embiid cares. All right, coming up next, be very careful about people who are loud on Twitter. Doesn't make it the truth. You can be loud and wrong. That's coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Great to have you in. The Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. Well, unfortunately, lots of Americans are fooled by loud. Loud is rarely right. Go to a bar, go to a lounge. Loud guy in a restaurant is usually the dimmest bulb. Same on the interweb and Twitter. Only 22% of America is on Twitter. It's people who like to get noticed and are loud. A lot of bad actors on Twitter. Only 6% of the 22% that are on Twitter really use it daily. It's a device to market and promote. I'm on it, and that's why I use it. I try to be a decent. I try to be goofy. A lot of bad actors. LeBron, everybody hates LeBron. LeBron, nobody likes him. That's funny. It's a Twitter data came out today. You'd think all 50 states hate LeBron because of that China thing. I've never had a single friend ask me about the China thing. My friends have lives. 26 states of the 50 hate other NBA players more. In fact, the NBA did this exact same Twitter usage data project. And Tom Brady, who is apolitical, was hated by more states. And he's played longer, and he's apolitical, and he's Mr. Nice Guy. Brady was hated by more states than LeBron. I don't know why Arizona hates Paul George. That's a riddle wrapped in an enigma. But it's funny, the states that did hate LeBron, Wisconsin, the Bucks, a liberal state, by the way, the Bucks, Oklahoma, Thunder, Indiana Pacers, New York Knicks, Michigan Pistons, Oregon Blazers, and Utah, a state that LeBron once said nobody ever wanted to play for the Jazz. Yes. Oh, the politics in China and nobody likes him. Oh, folks, don't be fooled by bad actors on Twitter. Tom Brady, Mr. Nice Guy, Family Guy, Supermodel Guy, Never Gets in Trouble Guy, Apolitical Guy, is hated by more people on Twitter than LeBron. And by the way, even in Texas, big old conservative Texas, I gotta hate LeBron. No, they hate Harden more. Oh, what about the South? Oh, they hate LeBron. No, actually, they hate Harden more in Atlanta, Kyrie more in Florida, Kyrie more in Tennessee, Kyrie more in the Carolinas. It's Harden and Kyrie are more hated in the South. Texas. I mean, Arizona's a conservative state. For some reason, they don't like Paul George. I don't know what that's all about. Come on. Nobody cares about the LeBron China. I mean, the percentage of people who care are on Twitter. They're loud. You go to parties, nobody's talking about that. I don't, by the way, there's a lot of things about, there's a lot of hypocrisy in all these pro sports. I mean, I remember years and years ago, when the NFL was outlawing hits and talking about player safety, but 25 years ago, they were showing videos to promote the games with these savage hits. It was like, and I love the NFL. It's like, wait a minute, what's the message here? Hits are good, hits are bad. Folks, Brady's more hated than LeBron. In fact, you know what? You want to know who LeBron's haters are on Twitter? It's Kevin Durant's burner account. I guarantee you that's half the states right there. Half the states right there. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
But
everybody hates him.
On the internet, it's true.
Nobody likes LeBron. I'm amazed, actually. Kyrie has like seven states.
The Paul George thing is the strangest. Who hates Paul George?
I understand, like, Houston.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But that the whole state?
I guess, like, the majority of, like, loud NBA fans on Twitter.
I mean, Dallas beat LeBron in the finals. They should kind of like him. He curled up. It was his worst series ever.
I don't know. Who knows? So 7 years ago, the Nuggets used their 41st pick in the draft to select Nikola Jokic. And last night, he was crowned league MVP. The All-Star Center was surprised and very happy following the announcement.
I never thought about it. Like, even when the season was over, I was into it. I was into Portland series. So I was trying to get his... My focus was on that, you know, so I was not even, I didn't have time, like, I didn't want to even think about it, because it's just a trophy, you know, and the season is still, it's not over. So I was just trying to put my focus on the games.
What I do love about Jokic, though, and I love about that particular bite, is that he's just a hooper. Like, he's not concerned about the MVP.
He's kind of dorky, and that's I like my athletes to be a little dorky.
All he cares about is what's going on with the season. He's got to carry his team right now.
Think about this, and this is really amazing. I mean, basketball is football is a domestic sport. Basketball is a global sport.
Yeah.
Baseball is increasingly a global sport. Think about how many great – the best young player is arguably Luka, and then you've got the MVP now – international player.
Yep.
Giannis is a two-time MVP international player. Now, the domestic stars are mostly carrying the league. You're LeBron, your Kobe's, your Shaq, whatever. But this is why I always argue. The quality of basketball. Now, the percentage of guys who are great leaders may be small.
Right.
Everybody plays together. AAU, nobody wants to bark and yell and be unliked except Chris Paul and LeBron, right? But the quality of athlete and player and skill in the NBA right now, we have a global pool. The quality is insane, and European players are generally, especially bigs, because they're in academies when they don't go to college. They go to these academies. These European players are so skilled, so young. I mean, Luka's plays like a 32-year-old veteran.
I know everyone hates change, but I actually think that this is overall better for the league. Now, we still have to wait and see what happens in these playoffs with the Nets. But if the Nets end up winning the championship, everyone is going to freak out. They're going to lose their minds. Okay, I'm just waiting for it. I already have my rant prepared because I know it. I know what's going to happen. Everyone's going to be like, AAU culture is taking over the NBA. It's ruined. Like, no crap, it's taken over the NBA. Because younger players start their careers in AAU, and then they get older. And then they get a little bit older. And then they make it to the NBA. So that's how they grow up. Change happens. Like, that the evolution, you know, it's terrifying, but the evolution of sports occurs. You were just talking about the NFL. We used to celebrate hits. There used to be highlight after highlight of these crazy hits and receivers getting spun around. And then we realized that's not the best way for the sport to sustain itself.
Yeah, now the NFL highlights are touchdown passes and wide receivers and offensive players, not hits.
We do this all the time. When you get new information, it's okay
to change your opinion. Oh my God.
It doesn't mean that you are like a hot take loser. It means that you got new information and you were like, oh, let me change my opinion based off of this new information rather than bludgeoning on with your bad take.
I mean, listen, the Clippers in the first two games against Dallas, Kawhi would not guard Luka. I'm like, the series is over. In the end of the series, Kawhi guards Luka. New information.
Oh,
the series
coaches
changes.
Making adjustments?
Yes. Like it's so. It's...
How revolutionary. Anyway, congratulations to Jokic. He has been carrying this team, obviously.
No,
it sucks Jamal Murray is injured. Like, I would just love to see this
probably,
team, especially with Jokic as an MVP, with Jamal Murray.
That changes. I mean, Jaylen Brown doesn't change the Celtics-Net series. No, Jamal Murray is a huge edge to the Suns. Huge edge.
It is. The best part of this, really, for me also is just that Jokic, where he was drafted and what he's been able to build himself into.
Well, best.
When he was drafted, actually, there was, I think we had the picture of this. Yeah. So you can see it on the bottom. This is actually a Taco Bell commercial that was airing whenever Jokic was drafted. Because he was drafted in the second round, 41st. And there he is. There's his announcement right there.
Well, he's
sorry
the best,
for radio listeners. But that's what was going on when Jokic was drafted. And now he's the MVP.
He's the best second-round player in the history of the league. Easily.
Yeah. Congratulations. I mean, it's...
He's the only MVP ever drafted in the NBA after the 15th pick. He's the only one.
He's also the first center since Shaq in 2000.
Wow.
Which should tell you a lot about how much the game has changed, but he's had an unbelievable season. So Giannis is having a miserable time at the free throw line this postseason, but it might get a little easy going forward. According to Anthony Puccio of Front Office Sports, the league has asked the Nets to stop taunting Giannis when he shoots free throws. So the Nets have been putting a stopwatch on the Jumbotron to call out any 10-second violations when Giannis is on the line. You remember Giannis had a 10-second violation in the Bucks Heat series?
Yeah.
And he's gone 2-for-10 from the line this series.
Yeah.
He's a 71.7%
yeah.
career shooter from free throws. But he does take an exorbitant amount of time
yeah.
at the free throw line, which the Nets have been doing this, which obviously any of the fans in the arena putting this pressure on the, obviously on Giannis, but also on the referees to call the 10-second violation.
He's
so
the Sergio Garcia of NBA free throw shooters. He takes too long.
He takes a long time, but it could get easier now because, I mean, now fans obviously have ways around this. Obviously they can just start counting when he gets there, not suggesting that, but the league is getting involved in that situation at least. So Aaron Rodgers skipped Packers minicamp, which was kind of what we all expected. So the next question is, will he attend training camp? So the 2020 CBA imposes a daily fine of $50,000 for missing training camp for players who aren't operating under a rookie deal. The fines cannot be waived. So if Rodgers skips all of training camp, $2 million gone, and there's nothing the Packers can do about it because it's in the CBA now. They have to fine him. So if you do the math, if Rodgers is planning on staying away for all of camp and beyond, it actually makes sense for him to retire on the eve of camp rather than fail to report, because he would save that $2 million. If he holds out or retires for all of 2021, he'll lose his salary, $14.7 million, and his $6.1 million roster bonus, and the Packers could also pursue his signing bonus of $11.5 million. He'd still be able to come back whenever he wants, but he could save the $2 million he would lose from not coming to camp. Now, if he doesn't report, he'd have to come back by week 10. Retirement gives him until week 13. But there's another date that's important to remember. So the Tuesday after week 8 is the trade deadline, right? I know I'm throwing a lot at you here, but after that closes, after that date, he can't be sent to another team. But the Packers could trade his rights because they hold his rights through 2023 if he retires. So the Packers could still trade his rights if he retires. So I don't think he's going to retire. I think he's going to show up at training camp. There's no value of him just losing random days at training camp. I think they'll get this all sorted out. But it's still entirely possible that he does this.
That's interesting. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
So much to talk about. Let's bring in my good friend, Nick Wright, sponsored by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. First things first. So I said to start my show, that's as good a loss as a basketball team can have. The Jazz were at home, first full capacity, 6 days off. It's like giving Andy Reid a bye week. Here, you got Quinn Snyder, a top coach, has 6 days. They played in L.A., three flights, three games, travel. They had no really days off. And Kawhi was ineffective. Paul George often happens ineffective. Donovan Mitchell's not going to play that great in a half. I actually love the Clippers this morning. I really do in the series. I like them before seven games even.
So, I think you're half right.
This was a game you had to expect Utah to win, and since I bet Utah -3.5, you had to expect them to win by 3. Son of a gun. How does that always happen? Doesn't matter. Let's stay focused on what you care about. You laid it out. The Clippers, it was their 8th game in 18 days. The Jazz had had almost a week off. So what you saw early when the Jazz missed 20 consecutive shots, which I don't know that I've ever seen, was that rust was playing a factor. And then in the second half, rest took over the Clippers' tired legs as the Jazz took over. So I agree with you in general. But there were a few things that, if I'm a Clippers fan, concern me. One is Paul George. He was good the first 3 games of this postseason. Since then, he is shooting 36%.
Yeah.
He had another miserable one last night, 4 of 17. They need him to be better. That's the first thing that concerns me. The second thing that concerns me is this. I don't think they want to ask Kawhi to guard Donovan Mitchell the way they asked him to guard Luka, because they need his offense so badly. The problem is the Jazz are not the Mavericks in this regard. When Donovan passes to wide-open three-point shooters, it is one of the best three-point shooting teams in league history by the numbers. They made at least 10 threes in every game they played all year. So the Clippers were giving up a bunch of open threes to Dallas all series and living with the results because Dallas was a middling three-point shooting team. Utah isn't that. So listen, I said before the playoffs, I thought Clippers in 7 in round 1. I thought Clippers in 7 in round 2. I will probably stick with that, but I do think Utah can present some real problems even if Donovan doesn't go for 32 second half points again.
I had to admit this morning I was ashamed of myself. I generally, when given the choice of a talented big who has injuries and even a player with flaws, I choose the player with flaws. Bigs get hurt early, they get hurt often. But I watched Embiid and Simmons last night, and I'm out on Simmons. I've been saying for years, just surround Simmons with three-point shooters. He's the best defensive guard, arguably. He's a 6'11". He finishes. But there is a coolness to him. He disappears. He just doesn't care enough. And Embiid, I worry about the torn meniscus. God, he cares. Totally passionate. Every basket matters. You know, leading the team. You put him on a mic. He's all in. And I got to be honest. Yeah. I don't think you can solve Simmons. He's got that cool thing, that Jay Cutler thing. You can't coach your way out of it. I think I've come to terms with, I'll take the huge flaw with Embiid's health over the rest of Simmons' issues.
Okay, so I agree. Listen, Embiid is one of the 5 best players in the league. Ben Simmons is, you know, one of the 25 best players in the league. So obviously I would rather have Embiid than Simmons. I think you're being a little too harsh on Simmons. Let me start with Embiid, though. Embiid thus far this postseason has more points than minutes. He is averaging more than a point a minute so far. If you remove the game where he went out early with the injury, he is averaging 33-9-5 on 61% from the field and 45% from 3 and a nice 85% from the line. He's been unstoppable. And by the way, whether he plays Milwaukee or Brooklyn in the next round, they don't have nobody in the league has a guy that can stop him. So when Embiid's out there, when he's healthy, and by the way, I don't know if you noticed this, Colin, during game 1 when Trae Young was doing that nonsense, wasting the clock, the only player on the Sixers who seemed to recognize it was Embiid. Embiid is an incredibly smart player as well, to go along with the wild physicality and gifts. So I agree with you on Embiid. Simmons, I think you've run, if I may say, a little too hot in the beginning and a little too cold now. I think that Ben Simmons was really impactful last night without scoring. That is part of what he does for you. He shut down Trae Young when he was guarding him. Matisse Thybulle guarded him the other half of the time. He did keep the offense moving. He obviously has a massive gaping hole in his game. And that is going to prevent him from being an MVP candidate ever if that doesn't get fixed. But I thought he was the defensive player of the year this year. He's going to finish second or third. So I think you are. Does he? Have I also heard the? I don't want to call it work ethic issues, but you know, young guy who really enjoys being a young, rich, famous guy. Sure, I've heard that. But do I think he's a huge net positive for Philly? I do. Do I think if Brooklyn gets through to the next round, Simmons will be a critical piece because I think he'll be guarding Harden the whole series if Harden is back? I do. So I think you're being a little too harsh on Simmons. But in general, of course, listen, Embiid is the guy that everything has to work through. There.
So I saw a stat the other day where Giannis, outside of 3 feet, shoots like 33% this year. Where are you with him now? I never bought into the face of the league. I rolled my eyes at a 60 Minutes piece. You know, when sports guys talk politics, people say stick to sports. When news people start calling Giannis face of the league, I'm like, stick to the Pentagon. Like, you'd stick to news. Like, he's not a face of the league guy. Wow. But he is the MVP. Like, where are you on him today, tonight?
I didn't expect a Leslie Stahl shot from Colin Cowherd this 12:40 in the afternoon on a Wednesday. All right. Here's where I'm at. If the Bucks, I went into the playoffs, Colin, and I said, who has the most to gain from a championship? And I looked at the path and the brackets, and I said, it's Giannis. If Giannis in round one knocks out Jimmy Butler and Heat culture, in round two knocks out the trifecta in Brooklyn, round three knocks out Embiid, and in round four, again, I was thinking it would be knocking out LeBron and AD, but whomever comes out of the West, then it totally validates and vindicates his two MVPs, and you say, okay, that's the best player in basketball. The flip side to that is, if the Bucks fall on their face in the postseason again, then there is a massive, I don't want to say asterisk next to his MVPs, but you recognize that he is a guy who can't be trusted in these spots. So I would argue tomorrow night is the biggest game of his career up to this point. I understand they were in a conference finals 2 years ago against Kawhi and the Raptors, but and they were up 2-0 in that series. And so you could say, what about game five or game six of that series? That was before they had any of the playoff failures. That series ended with them losing four straight. Last year against Miami in the second round was obviously a total disaster. You can't end up going down 3-0 to this Brooklyn team. The series is over if it happens. And here's another thing I'm going to put on Giannis, because I love Giannis. But with Kawhi and the Raptors, when they beat him, you could say, okay, Kawhi was arguably the best defender in basketball. When Miami beat him, you say, okay, Bam Adebayo is one of the three or four best defenders in basketball. Maybe Brooklyn beats Milwaukee either way, but they should have to beat Milwaukee with Giannis scoring 40 a night,
right,
like he did in the regular season.
Right.
They have no one to guard him.
Yeah.
There is nobody. Blake Griffin is daring him to take jump shots, and Giannis is taking him up on it. He can't do that. So I expect a big game from Giannis Thursday. I expect the Bucks to win Thursday. But if Giannis doesn't play well on Thursday, not only is probably Bud going to get fired, but you do, and I used this comp with you before, there's a bit, and this isn't supposed to be an insult, so there's a lot of Lamar Jackson comps, which is dynamic, unbelievable in the regular season,
yeah,
but has a limitation in his game that makes you nervous come the postseason. And if Giannis got to get over it. He's in the prime of his career, two-time MVP. He's got to be great Thursday.
By the way, only about a minute left. I saw that LeBron, everybody, China and all these things, politics, nobody likes LeBron. They did a Twitter study, which you can't lie about that, and that Tom Brady is actually hated in more states than LeBron, and Tom's apolitical. And so that America doesn't hate LeBron. In fact, in the South, the conservative South, they hate Harden and Kyrie more. It's crazy. Texas is conservative. They hate Harden more.
Yeah. My takeaway from that is I don't know how many states you said, 28 states?
24 that don't like him. 24 don't like him.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, yeah, I'd like to visit those, talk to those people. They also don't like cheating and scandals and what is clearly some type of performance-enhancing stuff going on. The guy's aging backwards. So that, I know you were talking LeBron. I'm more like, oh, Brady. Like, did you hear the latest Brady stuff? Had to be dragged off the practice field. Enough with the Brady propaganda, folks. But, yeah, so I don't really care. Joy Taylor has taught me there is two ways to use Twitter. One is to consume news and to just occasionally put out tweets. The other is to just napalm dopes. I'm choosing option one for now. I may one day go the joy path down option two, but option three is use it for scientific studies, and I ain't about that.
All right, Nick, good seeing you, buddy. Yeah, so Brady's hated by more people on Twitter than LeBron, and he's completely, for 20 years, apolitical.
You know what I take away from that?
What?
Because this is what we do with studies, right? We get studies, we get information, and then everyone has their takeaway, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think people hate greatness.
There's no question.
Overwhelming. Everyone hates Tom Brady, according to this study.
It's a badge of honor. If you're hated, there's a reason. People hate what they fear. There's no reason.
Or what they want.
You know who nobody hates?
They're not capable of achieving.
Nobody hates Blaine Gabbert.
Oh, I guess.
Nothing against Blaine. Handsome guy. Probably got a beautiful family.
People hate greatness, yes.
They hate rich people. They hate Brady. They hate LeBron. You hate what you fear. You hate people that don't believe what you believe in politics. You hate people who voted for somebody who may tax you more than the guy or woman you like. You hate what you fear. LeBron, in his prime, I'd fear him. He was going to beat your team.
But I also think
always.
People hate what they can't achieve, like what they can't obtain.
Yeah,
that's why we have a thing in society where we, you know, build people up and then we got to tear them down to build them up again. So there's like a little humility so we feel closer to them.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, the latest on Jordan Love of the Packers.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
TommyJohn.com/herd. Want to give dad something great for Father's Day? Get him Tommy John underwear, 20% off your first order. TommyJohn.com/herd. There's a story this morning. The Packers are going to let Jordan Love talk. So, I mean, he's the Loch Ness Monster. He's the UFO video of the NFL. He's been there over a year. There's no video of him doing anything. They've got a bubble wrap on him. So far, this is from Packer reporters. So remember, Packer reporters are going to lean heavy in favor of good news. He's not been good at camp. 12 of 23 passing, a failed two-minute drill, struggling with accuracy. They won't let anybody really watch any of this stuff. They won't let him talk. So this is the Packers' worst nightmare. They screwed up their relationship with their current star quarterback, and their replacement can't play yet. Also, Aaron Rodgers' teammates, Devontae Adams and David Bakhtiari, who are great NFL players, Hall of Fame-level players, both came out yesterday and said, we've got Aaron Rodgers back. Nothing against the Packers, but we've got his back. I keep hearing these Packer coaches say Jordan Love's come a long way, and my takeaway is, well, how bad was he last year? He's struggling this year. Matt LaFleur did at least talk about him yesterday and was precise when asked questions about Jordan Love.
He needs every rep he can get right now. He's a young quarterback that was not afforded a preseason last year. And so give him as many as he can handle. And we'll you know, spell him every now and again. But I just think every rep that he takes is so valuable. And you can learn something from both the good and the bad.
Okay, that's not word salad. That's a real question somebody asked. That's a real answer by Matt LaFleur. He needs reps. Everyone helps. He has good and bad. All right, I'm good with that. That's the first legitimate answer. And nothing against Matt LaFleur. I didn't like the way last year ended with his coaching decisions. But nonetheless, that's a real answer. He's not talking in circles and using all these cliches. He needs every rep he can take. Good days, bad days. It's uncomfortable. But, you know, Brian Gutekunst is the general manager. I don't know him. I do think the Packers generally are pretty well run. You know, Bart Starr, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, they get the quarterback right a lot. They do a great job of developing offensive lines. They took three offensive linemen, six in the last 2 years. You know, four of them will end up being Pro Bowlers. That's what the Steelers know, receivers and linebackers. The Packers know offensive line. But Brian Gutekunst, the Packers don't want to fire him because they don't want to set a precedent, which I think is stupid. Sometimes there are. Howard Stern was a precedent. Make rules for him. Change rules. Aaron Rodgers, you may have to change some rules. But if you're a general manager and you tick off your star MVP quarterback and you butcher his replacement, you could get fired for that. That's not being petty. That's not good enough. It's the most important position. So, and remember, I hold NFL GMs to a higher standard than I hold NBA GMs. NBA, you're getting international footage. I mean, remember when Luka got drafted? There was two pieces of tape. You kept running the same tape over and over. You have 1 year of college tape. And in college basketball, you have very few pros. So 90% of the tape you have is Jalen Suggs of Gonzaga playing against guys who will never play in the NBA. You get an Alabama player on tape for 3 years, he's playing Auburn, Florida, Georgia. That right tackle is going up against edge rushers throughout the SEC. They're all playing in the NFL. You should not whiff on picks in the NFL. Now, I understand guys get hurt and stuff, but there are general managers in the NFL that draft really, really well 4 to 5 years. You should. You know, if I said who's the best drafting GM in the NBA, nobody comes to mind. Because it's hard. Like, great drafters. Danny Ainge, I always thought was pretty good. Hit one home run with all those picks. One. And a couple of doubles. All right, hour two's around the corner. The Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. Mini camp, Aaron Rodgers, and no show. Greg Jennings next.